From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are in a different location than normal. Super excited today. Rob Archie, he's the founder and he's the CEO of Urban Roots Hospitality Group, and we're sipping some of his beer. And cheers, Rob. This is really cheers, good stuff. Rob not only makes beer, but he owns a bunch of restaurants, and we're now in his speakeasy. And I walked out for a second. And I could barely find my way back in, but excited to be here with you, Rob, and look forward to profiling your story. We love sharing the stories of winning and people here locally that have had a lot of success, and it can be really inspirational. Occasionally it's educational, so maybe today I'll have some of that, but I expect to be inspired because it seems like what you're doing is fun, and so it motivates me to be in a speakeasy, which is kind of like a secret bar. We're sipping some of your private reserve, and I'm fired up to have you on the show. Thanks for inviting me out.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
Appreciate it.
So let's talk about your story. Maybe just an overview of the organization and maybe the journey to this success that you have.
It's pretty humble beginnings, man. I mean, 2008, I opened my first place, Pangea, in Curtis Park, right across from legendary Gunther's Ice Cream. Yeah. And at that time, I probably had, a month and a half experience working at Red Lobster as a busboy.
No way.
Prior to opening, yeah, man. And then, I got inspiration. I was, got a chance to,
You were working at Red Lobster as a busboy. You were a professional basketball player, so yeah, we didn't get into all that.
But then, a year over in Italy, I guess you can call it that. But, that's where I got the inspiration, being in that culture, pubs, cafes. That's what gave me the inspiration where I was like, man, that would be cool to do something in the States like that. And so, in college is when I worked as a busboy. That was it. Yeah. That's all the experience I had in restaurants.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Okay, so you're working as a busboy, and walk me through the journey. You open up the Pangea.
It's like, it's interesting. I reflect on it now, but little things that I seen, in Europe, Italy, I seen how important these third spaces were to the community.
When you say third spaces,
like cafes, pubs, places that are outside of your home and work. Mm-hmm. So that's what we consider like third spaces, mm-hmm, where people gather.
Yeah.
So what I've seen is how important that is to one's community. And so to be able to just open a place, it wasn't like a financial plan. It wasn't like I'm going to go make a lot of money doing this. It was like it's an honor to be able to just do something that could sustain itself to be halfway successful.
So it started off as a place where just the people that live really close by would act.
Yeah,
it would be like their third space.
We just started another project. Latest project is called Good Neighbor, and that was the goal. In the first place of Pangea was just to be a good neighbor. Be a good neighbor to Curtis Park, to Oak Park, to Gunther's Ice Cream.
Wow.
I just wanted a place that people can walk over, hang out, provide, interesting stuff to eat, interesting stuff to drink. And that's what it was. So Pangea became, when it first opened, it was pretty, we had beers, we had coffee, pastries, and then it evolved into a beer bar, and then evolved into a restaurant. But at first we didn't even have a kitchen. So we're making paninis, we're making sandwiches, it's pastries. And then, you'd have wine and whatever. But I'll tell you what, when we first started, all that equated to about $372 a day revenue.
Wow.
Oh, my working goodness. From about, 6 in the morning all the way to 9 at night. But you know what, Mark, what's crazy? At that time, I didn't know any different and I was successful because all I knew was that I used to substitute teach at times and you make $100 a day. And all I know is all I need to make is $100 a day.
Interesting.
And I'm not working for nobody and I'm fucking working for myself.
Yeah.
Right? That was the goal. And so I think kind of that ignorance was bliss, looking back on it, because it's not like I had this whole standard and plan that I need to make X amount. If I don't, I fail. So,
Were you the, I'm assuming you were there the long hours, so
all day.
You were the face of the organization. You were face of the restaurant.
I wasn't like it. I was.
You were.
I'm gonna go see Rob. People didn't know Pangea. They're like, I'm going to see Rob.
Wow.
And, you know, it just so happened. It's like in Belgian beer was a thing that I fell in love with. I traveled. I sought to go get. And so I'd go back and forth to Europe. And also, as, you know, craft beer kind of expanded, I'd go up and down California and travel anywhere I could to try to find the best beers I could and just share. You think about that time. I mean, it's 2008. So you got the downturn in the economy.
Yeah. The great recession. Yeah.
So, I mean, people can't maybe go get a new house, a new car, travel, but for $8, $10, you can arguably have the best beer in the world. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was crazy.
We needed a beer at that time.
Well, what's funny is that at that time, I mean, for the most part, beer was a commodity, right? It's like $5 a pint. That's it. So if you're charging more than that, it was like you're ripping people off to the person who didn't know about these kind of beers.
Yeah, because at that time, there's layoffs. I remember I was in the security business in 2008, I still am, but we had a lot of employees and we had a reduction in force, and that was really difficult. I mean, everybody was afraid, and so people were pinching every penny.
Yep, 100%. I mean, but that's what made it special was the feeling you got by coming in, tasting something that you'd never tasted. Also, the vulnerability between people, the strangers, that being open to tasting things they haven't tasted, right? And going, and so most of the time it's like, give me my Bud Light or give me my Coors, whatever, right? It's like, no, we don't have that, but try this Weinstephaner or try this St. Bernard Sap 12. Or it's like, what kind of foods do you like? What kind of flavors do you like? Well, taste the spirit tastes like that. Now all of a sudden it's like they're open up, then they're bringing friends in and they're sharing these tastes and sharing these experiences. And it took on a world of its own. You know, literally, Mark, it took on a world of its own. And so and slowly we added the kitchen and then we added the bottle shop. And as we can, I mean, I never had any debt on that business. It was like, as we grew, I would reinvest in the business.
Wow. Okay. So give me an overview of the total organization now, and then we'll walk back through the journey. So you've had a lot of success, and so I want to have people understand the size of the organization and all that's going on.
So, I mean, going from to having my wife, you know, taking orders at the counter, me making sandwiches and bringing in a couple people to help, we're now up to a little over 150 people in the whole organization. So it wasn't till about 10 years later, we opened Urban Roots. And that was when I met my partner, Peter Hoey, and he's a brewmaster. And so I was totally content at the time to just have in Pangea. And I would always say, I don't never want to open a second location. But I never would hesitate to do something with him. So when we found the location, it was who used to be Brownie's Blueprint. We found that location, you know, we walked it, we kind of envisioned it, and we're like, it's an ecstatic yes. And so at the time he was working for Brewer Supply Group. So he's selling ingredients all over the world. He has three kids. He has a great job. He's still into beer, but he's never had his own business like that. And so it was like, he's taking a risk, and I'm kind of selling, you know, we're like, yeah. So doing that project was a big deal. And that was kind of the big thing. And, you know, that's still kind of mothership, right?
And we're drinking some of his beer right now, Luna de Miel. And you were telling me that means honeymoon.
That means that.
So was this for his honeymoon or yours?
This was for his wedding.
Oh, for his
wedding. He made that for his wedding. And so, yeah, that was what he called it.
And you can buy this, obviously, in your restaurants.
You buy restaurants, Raley's, Safeway.
Wow. And there's different beyond Luna de Miel. This is like a Mexican lager.
Yep.
Was his honeymoon in Mexico?
No.
Oh,
no. I don't know where his honeymoon
was. That's a cool name. beyond this beer, you have different styles.
Yeah, we have about, you know, probably about five core beers. And then we brewed over 200 beers.
Okay.
Different beers. And so from then on, we, you know, from after that, we opened Bach, who I originally opened with the Selling Group. Great group. They have the kitchen, Selling's Markets. During the pandemic, ended up buying them out. They kind of focused on what they're doing. And we took over this solely. And then we added the Roost, which is where we're sitting now. It's a speakeasy. And it was, so that was like right after the pandemic, or right, you know.
So people that might not be familiar with Bach, I was thinking like baseball, B-A-L-K, but it's chicken.
Fried chicken.
B-A-W-K.
Like Bach?
Yeah. Okay. So it's fried chicken. And so it's interesting how you've got a different style. You know, your different restaurants have a different style. So I hear Bach is, I mean, I think they're all very successful, but Bach's got the ability to expand too.
Yeah. Whoops. No, we're opening an airport. It should be done this summer.
You open up a Bach in an airport?
Bach is going to be in the airport.
Wow.
So that's going to be cool.
In Sacramento Airport?
Southwest Terminal.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, that's happening. And then we ended up, Gary Sleppy, kind of going back to Pangea Belgian beer days, mm-hmm. Gary Sleppy owned a place called The Shack in East Sac.
Okay.
And so when he and his wife decided to retire, I was one of the first people he called, and he told me. And then he just said that, look, I don't know your situation, but I would love if you took it over and did something with it.
Okay.
So, and I was sitting here, I was sitting literally in the roost, we're in a meeting, and when he called, so we did it. And I wasn't going to follow The Shack because, you know, like these spots have their legendary thing, mm-hmm. following, and I wasn't going to try to redo his menu. So it's a taco spot.
Okay.
You know, used to do burgers and kind of more American cuisine.
So what's the name of that?
Cerveceria.
Cerveceria. So it's beer and tacos.
Beer, tacos, nice. Like kind of, yeah. It's that's one of my favorite spots. So I love eating there. So, yeah.
Okay, so you got that. You've got Bach, and we're here in the speakeasy.
The Roost.
How did the idea of the speakeasy come? Because a lot of people don't even know what a speakeasy is. It's like this hidden bar. I mean, it's a full bar, and it's got this sort of rustic. This one has a kind of a rustic feel, but it's hidden. Do people know it's here?
Or? People know it's here once they come. You know, we do have it on. It's public in the sense of, you know, on social media and things like that, but hidden from the physical space, mm-hmm. in the restaurant. And so you basically walk through a janitor's closet and get to here. So, but it's fun, you know, like hospitality is about experiences. It's like, I love the thing, like you might not know exactly the name of the meal you had. You might not know the name of your server, but you'll never forget how you felt. And I always believe that, like, that's what we do. You know, you could have a drink anywhere, but it's cool to have a drink in an inspired environment.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's what this was about, was like, I wanted to, no different than Pangea, I wanted to serve the best spirits I could find. And that's what we did here.
When people come into this speakeasy, or maybe the other restaurants, do people know each other? You mentioned that the people are from the neighborhood at some level, but this is like a destination place too.
People, not as much. Like, this is more like, you know, kind of formal sit down. But yes, what you're saying, the Urban Roots, people know each other. People come in. I mean, you have parties at Urban Roots, groups of 30 people will walk in, knowing that they have a place to sit.
Wow, that's big.
It's big.
Yeah.
And so
how big's Urban Roots square footage
big.
Wise?
It's like 20,000 square feet.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, it's just, you know, like, and Pangea is the same. Like, you know, people know their neighbors. You come in, Cerveceria is the same. You know that you're going to, there's a good chance you're going to go see Paul next door. You're going to see such and such, right? Or great place to meet up. This spot is definitely a spot, like, I'm going to go there with someone, mm-hmm. but I definitely know the bartender. I know, you know, what I'm getting into.
And on a speakeasy, are there certain hours? Because like the, I could see the lunch crowd as came in here at Bach, and if you come through Bach and then you come into the speakeasy, what's the name of it again? I'm sorry.
Roost.
This seems like it'd be more like a nighttime clientele.
Yeah. So it opens up at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
And stays open till around 1-2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And it's open Wednesday through Saturday. And then we do a lot of private parties, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Okay.
So
we're on R Street. Let's think about the locations too. So you have some that are in East Sac.
Yep.
And then now we're on R Street, and you're opening up others right in this area as well.
So yeah, Good Neighbors kind of and Ice Blocks.
Okay.
Amazing, you know, development down there. And yeah, it's just, you know, our street's an amazing spot. Artists, you know, you have the Artist Lofts down the street at the wall, Camellia Coffee. I mean, it's endless. Like Mike Heller, he did a great job developing Ice Blocks. And, you know, we had the opportunity to go in there. It was a no brainer. It was just something, like, once again, I always have a saying, I'm like, if it's not a static yes, it's a no.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Or
I mean,
no
in this
way,
business,
huh?
You got to do it because nothing's guaranteed. You know, it's like, it's a, you know, I feel like the restaurant industry is one of the most important industries. The hospitality industry is one of the most important industries in the world. I feel like it's an honor to be able to do it. It's an honor to make ends meet. My experience is that even very successful people, they always, not maybe not all, but always would love to be a part of a successful restaurant. Yeah. And that's a difference, because no one wants to be a part of anything failing, whether you know you're a basketball player or you're big in business. But it's an honor to host, to have the responsibility to host the community, to be able to bring things that people that are new to people to experience things, to help build on what your city identity is. I mean, you think about when you go and you travel, the first thing you think of is a lot of times is what place you're going to eat at. Mm-hmm. A lot of stories you hear back from people that traveled is where they ate at or where they drank at, or, and how they got to know the community was through somewhere related to hospitality. So it truly is an honor day to day to be a part of this. And so it's like, it's not so much for me what I get out of it. It's like, I'm just very grateful every day that I get to participate, because being in this for almost 20 years, I've seen a lot of people come and go. And what I've learned from that is that my responsibility is to have a healthy environment, because it's probably one of the most transient industries around, right? People work for you, then they don't work for you. They quit, you fire them, they come back, you hire your neighbor's kid, you hire your family. It's just always, but my goal and our goal is, when you interface with this environment, it's a pleasant memory. And even if it's hard, you agree to disagree, but you keep the respect, you keep kindness, and you keep the door open, if all possible. So it's like, it's a responsibility we have as being a part of this industry.
Yeah. I have this motto, treat work like play, and then just play for decades. What do you love most about this job? Because it's a business, but there's some stuff that's like fun.
You fucking deal with some amazing people, dude. Chefs, bartenders. I mean, the brains that people have, the creativity people have, the passion that people have, it's humbling day to day. I mean, in our organization, I really feel blessed, because it's like, not only you got people manufacturing, so the brewers that are working, creating things from grain, from raw material, to, people here at the Roost, like tastemakers, sampling things, bringing things in that are super interesting, and then not only bringing in these spirits, but then making these concoctions with them. Mm-hmm. Doing things like frying chicken that you're doing the same thing over and over again, but it's a science in how to do it, right? So it's a discipline. So on and on, you're around people that are just better than you. Mm-hmm. Everybody has the role. My thing is, like, you got to be a star in your role. And so, like, our job is just to, create these platforms for people to do what they do. So that's what's really cool, Mark, is just like being a part of this culture and just, helping to continue to foster a healthy culture,
So you bring up culture. You and I were talking about basketball earlier, and there's a lot of people that play basketball. It's tough to make it to the professional level. A lot of restaurants don't make it. A lot of people think it'd be fun, and then they sort of run out of steam and it's not that fun anymore, and they quit. Obviously, you've been successful. The culture's got to be a piece of that.
It's 100%. Like, it's 100% a piece of it. I have 5 core values, and all decisions are based off of them. Want to take nothing personal. The thing is that it's not about me. And so the thing that I learned as an athlete is I used to think it was about me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when you're trying to make a team or you're trying to advance, you're always thinking about what you got to do. And it's really hard to have a culture, a coach that makes you feel safe enough to be selfless, to have a position, an organization to play selflessly. A lot of times, Jordan didn't start unselfish. Right?
Right. Yeah. He got cut from his high school basketball team.
I'm going to get mine, and then y'all can get yours. And he had enough talent to pull it off to where then Phil Jackson comes in, and then it's like, all right, we'll do the triangle. Mm-hmm. And Steve, you can get your shots. Horace, you get a rebound. Pippen, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like that's happened with our group, where at first it's hand-to-hand combat with me just being at Pangea, but now I'm surrounded by amazing teams. team that I get to just be a better teammate.
How did you come up with your core values? Was it you and experience. Your basketball, or was it other people helping you do that?
It's just, no, it was literally my personal experience. I mean, I could tell you, I mean, my first value is, you know, I always say it's all based off kindness, but it's like, you know, kindness starts with me, but it's about self-care. So I just believe that, you know, it's important to take care of yourself, because especially as a leader, you have to build capacity in yourself in order to deal with others, to be available for others. If you're not in a good space, it's really hard to help anyone else. If I'm to my limit, am I really present with you, listening to what your challenge is? Am I really able to help you?
Yeah.
Right.
And that starts with like your relationship with your spouse and the relationship with your kids, getting
even
the family.
Before that, I don't even want to talk to them before I work out.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Get your cycling in.
I literally,
get your
when
workout
I say
in,
yes, I get up,
get
and
a sweat going.
Get a sweat going. I don't even want to interface with them, because I tell them the same thing. Yeah. Go take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing that I, with all teammates, is the first thing I'll ask if there's a situation, how are you doing? You know, are you in a good spot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it starts with accountability. We can all, it's easy. It's a lazy option to point fingers. It's harder to reflect on yourself. And so that's one of the biggest things, is just accountability, especially in an organization, in this place, you got to trust people. And people do need to be at their best. And you know, it always comes out in the wash. If people aren't healthy, it always comes out in the wash.
It does.
You know?
I have to imagine that the growth has created opportunity for people that bought in early or are buying in today, because you're continuing to grow. Talk to me about, maybe, is there a story of maybe one of your teammates that led by example and it turned out to be a really good decision for them?
My nephew, he started with me at 16 years old. He didn't know what he was going to do. And he was, you know, just identity crisis, like every 16-year-old, like most 16-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
He's bussing tables. He's like, you know, we're at beer week. It's really busy at beer week. So all hands on deck, anyone can start working. So he's helping bussing tables. And he asked, you know, you mind if I do a couple shifts? It's like, yeah. So he kept doing it. Next thing you know, he's like doing dishes, bussing tables. Then, you know, we hired a chef. And then he's like prepping for him, cutting onions and doing whatever. Then he's like, I think I want to kind of start cooking. So then he's, you know, doing some prep work, and then he's gets on the line, gets kicked off the line.
Okay.
Back on the line. Yeah. Long story short, he ends up becoming a sous chef to the next chef that came in that really liked him. So he worked under him. And then what Greg liked to do, he always liked to smoke meats. You know, that we had this little smoker in the back of Pangea, so he always liked to smoke meat. So when we had the idea of opening up Urban Roots, we were like, that would be a great, you know, smoked meats would be a great thing for that. Like,
Greg knows how to do it.
He knows how to do it, but he's never, you know, he didn't go to school for this. He didn't, you know, never, you know, ran a kitchen. But once again, he just used the values. We work really. He takes, one thing about him is he takes feedback well. He takes feedback really well. And he doesn't take things personal. He might take things hard at times, but he doesn't take things personal. But the first day, I'll never forget, man. Man, we might have did, I think it was a lot. I mean, maybe like 65 grand. I don't know. It was like something crazy the first day we opened, and it was so many tickets. And I remember Greg just got it handed to him. You know, he's trying to run this kitchen, mm-hmm. and things are going wrong. He's trying to get things out. And he just went out on the curb and just started crying. He just broke down, you know. But what I'm saying is that now Greg is our culinary director over all the chefs.
How old is he now?
So Greg is about 32.
32. So 16 years later,
yeah.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah, he's probably someone that I run everything by. I mean, he's my nephew. He's you know, he's my sister's son. So it's we innately just connect, and so it's awesome. And like, once again, nothing's personal. Like, I can, you know, one of my other values is, you know, always practice radical honesty. And so out of kindness, it's not being rude. It's not like in front of people, mm-hmm. but it's like pulling people aside and like telling them your truth. And that's something that we have the relationship to do. And that's what makes our relationship work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to imagine, you know, you think about restaurants and it's yeah, you could be a 16-year-old, maybe a college person, and there's a certain amount of turnover. Is that minimized because you are growing and creating opportunity? So someone like Greg, instead of bouncing and going to find some other opportunity, the growth is actually created. You know, he became the culinary guy or the chef.
Most people that we promote that have grown in our company have come within. Mm-hmm. You know, and another thing is succession plan is really important. You know, some people will say, hey, I'm successful, you know, because, you know, Mike has worked for me for 17 years. Well, it might be successful, it might not be. Mike might be a grumpy, he might be a grumpy old dude that doesn't love his job, but does it because he's going to get a watch. You know, like, and so my thing is this. Instead of, like, people will say, I look at my employees like family. I don't look at my employees like family. I look at them like a team. I look at it as like we play seasons together. We all have a mutual interest to go through and do these projects. And when your season's up or you want another position, then let's talk about that and let's plan for it and let's leave that space better than you found it. Because a lot of times out of loyalty, you can have these dreams and you can have a good intention, but at the end of the day, life might take you in another direction and it doesn't make any sense. And an emotion can get into it and it can become negative. It doesn't need to become negative. It comes back to that, like I said, that healthy environment is like, look, work to leave the place better than you found it.
Yeah.
You know, and have a succession plan. And knowing that the hospitality world is this transient, it's just only wise to do that, you know?
I've heard it said that a professional is just an amateur that decided never to quit. So were there ever times in building this organization where you felt like you had failed and maybe you're like, should I have really got myself into this?
Like last week? I mean, here, this is the thing. It's not a destination, it's a road traveled, not a destination arrived. Like at the end of the day, like I said, I'm just grateful to do this day in and day out. You know, a plan is only as good as whatever. At the end of the day, Mark, you don't like losing money.
That's right.
Right? You don't like, you know, you if things aren't working, they're
my
just not working.
My business partner just walked in. We better not be losing money.
And I mean, it's not even about money, right? You just, you know, there's certain things to where things aren't working out, but once again, it's humbling. You got to center yourself and be in a healthy place to where you're like, I'm doing it for the right reasons, you know? And so, yeah, I might feel like that, but I got a responsibility, not only to myself, I got a responsibility to my family, to our teammates, to our community. And so when I just got back for, like I said, from New York, owner of Cat's Deli can't just say, I'm tired, I'm going to quit. The neighborhood wouldn't let him. Mm-hmm. New York wouldn't let him. You know what I'm saying? You have these institutions like Gunther's Ice Cream where it's just like it's now a part of Sacramento.
Yeah.
And you want to keep that place there. And so like that's what you strive for. You strive to have something that's an institution, something that people identify with and you're known for. And I mean, that's ultimate goal, right?
Yeah. We have this motto, put your money where your town is. And I can see you reinvesting into your home, your town here. This is your people and you're reinvesting the success right here instead of opening up in New York or Vegas or, right? You're opening up in the Sacramento airport instead of maybe somewhere else. Right. So you're building from like the inside out.
It just dawned on me. So remember I'll tell you about those $372 days?
Yeah.
So I used to walk home and I'd be walking home and you couldn't think past the next week because your business is day to day. It's touch and go, right? Mm-hmm. And so I used to just think, I said, man, all I want to do is have a memory that if I'm sitting around in a rocking chair and I'm bullshitting with my grandkids or with my friends or whoever, I could tell them I used to do this shit. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun story.
That's kind of like your worst case scenario.
Bro, I got a good story over a good bottle of whiskey or something. You know what I'm saying?
It's well, like the story got pretty dang good. Your story is going to be a really good story nowadays.
It's like, you know, we ain't keeping none of this. it's all, you know, you pass it on or whatever, but it's like, at the end of the day, you just got this story. So I said, you know, let's keep it rolling.
So my business partner, Rick Spencer, just walked in and he wanted me to ask you about your recognition and your awards. You've been recognized for different things around the area. Talk to us about some of the recognition and maybe, is there a recognition or an award that you're most proud of?
So, yeah, I mean, so one of our first awards that we got was Brewery of the Year by CCBA, California Craft Brewers Association. And so that was a few years back. That was really cool. What was interesting is like this, like the beginning of this year was kind of like a whirlwind. Like it started like I'm, you know, in my shorts, you know, eating cereal at the counter and I'm like strolling through Apple News and it's like, Forbes is like, oh yeah, best IPAs in the world. I'm like, oh, it's interesting. Click on it. And it's like, we're on the list.
Whoa.
And we won.
No one told you until then.
I just looked. I knew we had won this international beer competition, but I didn't. Forbes had covered it and then was like, these are the best IPAs in the world, right? So we got best double IPA 2024 from, you know, so that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
So then we,
best IPA in the double IPA. That's in America or is that the world?
The world.
Oh, wow.
And so that was cool. And then Peter calls me up and he's like, you should check out this. And he forwards it to me. And then Whiskey Advocate came out and was like top 125 bars, whiskey bars in America. And the Roost got
the Roost, 20. This right where we're sitting right now.
We're sitting,
you're 20.
20.
In the nation?
In the nation.
In the nation.
In America.
Whiskey bar. Okay, so I'm looking up. Yeah, that is a selection. It goes really high, ladies and gentlemen. You can't see it if you're watching this on YouTube, but it, like when people come in, they probably want a recommendation. When you're in a real specialty whiskey place, do they want recommendations? What do people recommend?
So a lot of times the first thing that you get is like, what's your most expensive whiskey?
Mm.
Right? Because people are like, what's rare? What's expensive? And so like, you know, we have Eagle Very Rare up there. You know, at one point it was like selling on the street for like maybe $36,000. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of different stuff. Thomas Handy, you know, George T. Stagg. There's so many different. And a lot of times it's
you've
like,
got good security in this place too, in case.
Arm guards, I mean, that's a valuable collection. The building. We got all that. So, but no, it's like there's things. So there, first of all, there's no duplicate bottle on that wall. So everything's its own age statement, its own expression. So there's things on that wall that don't exist anymore. So you know that. So you're paying for things because they purely just don't exist. So if you want to try it, there's a cost to that.
Yeah, so a $36,000 bottle of whiskey, what do you sell like one glass for? That's like
$5,000? By the ounce, you know? So, you know, I think it's, we try to be as competitive as, well. I don't know exact price, but I think we give them an appetizer or something.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah. But you mix drinks. People want to order stuff like an old fashioned or something that's more like a
classic cocktail.
Yeah.
So, and then we'll also like, you know, kind of like recommend spirits that go with that, you know, like, and some of them more higher proof, and, mm-hmm. you know, rye whiskeys and things like that. So it could just be fun in here. So you can like, say if you just like old fashions, like simple drinks, but you could do it with like some of the best whiskey in the world, mm. you know?
What do you, like the bartenders probably, obviously they have a great knowledge of how to make a drink. There's people like myself that like, I want to order a beer or a margarita. I'm not really as, I guess, used to ordering something that might have whiskey in it. When somebody just comes in and wants something plain Jane, does that bug the bartender?
No, they love it.
Okay.
Because bartenders, like most service people are like simple beer and shot.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of times they don't want to think.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times they're thinking so much and that's what they're doing for their job. So it's just like you. I mean, I know you probably just don't install security systems for fun at your house.
Right. Yeah. It's got to be. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. No. So it's like a lot of times it's like thoughtless and it's just super simple, like quality, you know, beer mm-hmm. and a shot or just simple whiskey or simple, you know, gin drink or, you know, tequila or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about. Did we cover all the restaurants? Because the Good Neighbor Is that the name of the new one that's coming up?
Yeah, Good Neighbor is one to come out. One of the things I want to go back because I love Pangea, and sometimes it doesn't get all the, you know, it's the older one, so it doesn't. But we won the burger battle more times than any restaurant ever.
What's the burger battle?
So it's Rodney, it doesn't happen anymore, but it used to be at downtown. They had, I forgot the name of the park, but all the restaurants were invited. There's probably like 20 restaurants, top restaurants, and you have to get an invite that he believed had the best burgers. And so everybody would be basically in a circle and you would compete. Cesar Chavez Park, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
So you would just compete.
And you'd make the burgers out at the park.
You'd make the burgers at the park. And we used our burger that we sell every single day is a Pangea burger. Mm. And we won every single time we entered. So four times.
Okay, so you guys use obviously high quality meat in your regular hamburger. You don't make Kobe beef and make a hamburger out of it. You buy good ingredients.
Good ingredients.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. And it's a simple burger. It's very familiar.
Do you guys have the attitude of buy from as close a proximity as possible versus buying from a long ways away?
Well, it's easy to do here because we have the greatest growing region, arguably in the world.
Yeah.
So it's easy to do. So we work with Produce Express. We work with local vendors that work with local farms. And so it's really easy to do.
It's like farm to fork.
We are literally farm to fork. We're fortunate to live here.
Wow. Any other awards that we should make sure we...
There's the burger battle. I just wanted to say that.
So they still have it. You still make a great burger over there.
We still... came out last Sunday and did another review and said it's arguably still the best burger in this region.
Is it the taste of the, like I had a burger last night. It was great. I go to places that are a little closer to where I live, but at Bennett's, they've got a really good burger. What's special about your burger? Is it the meat, or do you doctor it up with, like last night at Bennett's, I had, I don't think they're competition because they're a long ways away.
Yeah.
But I had like a fried egg put on top of my bacon cheeseburger.
So here's my example of what I think a good burger is. I think that we all already know what a good burger is. So if I say, I feel like a hamburger, I already know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
The job of that restaurant is don't f*** that up.
Yeah. Yes.
Don't get too cute with it. Like, I want a charbroiled burger. Like, I want, you know, good cheese. I want some acid. I want some crisp. You know, there's certain things. I want a good bun. And innately, I already know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
So don't get cute.
Don't make
with
it too fancy.
And Pangea burger is that. It's a half pound patty, you know, custom blend, special sauce, lettuce, pickle, cheese, tomato, toasted bun.
You guys have fries too.
Fries with it.
Yeah.
And it's very high quality, very familiar.
I love it.
But I'm just saying, you start treading deep waters when you get cute with items like that.
Yes, I can imagine. I can imagine.
So, real quick.
Yeah.
My nephew, the same one I gave a lot of compliments to, there's one day he got cute and he goes to the burger battle and he goes, I don't want to do our burger. I was like, all right, what do you want to do? He's like, I want to do these sliders. And we could put these quail eggs on them.
Mm.
So it's like little sliders with quail eggs. So I remember I was like, all right, I'll trust you, whatever. So I remember we were at the contest, we set up, I walked by the booth, I grabbed one of the sliders, I ate them, I go, we lost. And I walked away.
I mean, what's a quail egg even taste like?
It was so unbalanced, and it was like, you know, so every time we entered the Pangea Burger or won, that was the only time we never won. And it just wasn't right. And so anyway, and I remember we had to take all this pan of quail eggs. We didn't use them all. And they're in the Sprinter. And I remember I was just, that scene, I was like, man, I don't want to feel like this again.
Love it. Okay, so the Good Neighbor is opening right here near where we're at now on our street.
Yeah.
Right? So you have this cluster. Tell me about this Good Neighbor restaurant. And then I want to kind of get into, like, which of these are you going to continue to open up more? The longer term vision, I guess, for opening up restaurants.
So Good Neighbor is exactly that. Like, the whole thing is just have a welcoming spot to this neighborhood.
And that's in the ice blocks. It opens how long from now?
We're shooting for June.
Okay.
We're shooting June-ish. We should be close around that time. But it's all going to be all live fire. So everything's cooked over wood.
Oh, nice.
Pizzas are cooked over, you know, wood-fired pizza oven, full wood-fired, you know, cooktop. So everything's going to have just simple meats, you know, grilled chicken, burgers, steak, really fresh, you know, ingredients, salad. So, I mean, you basically think about just taking these really good proteins and you can put them in applications over salad, entrees, mm-hmm. with good sides, you know, roasted vegetables, all that. And full bar.
And so do all the restaurants have a full bar?
No.
Okay. So we got, so obviously we got a full bar here.
Full bar here, full bar at Cerveceria, and there'll be a full bar at Good Neighbor.
Okay.
Pangea's beer and wine, and Urban Roots is a brewery.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Makes a brewery there. Okay. So now you have this, and I know you're opening up a Bock at the airport. What's the timing on that?
End of summer.
End of summer. Okay. End of summer. So we'll be able to go to the Southwest and get some chicken. If I'm telling a Southwest flight. Okay. Got it. Okay. So longer term vision, what can we expect beyond? I mean, obviously that's exciting near term. Longer term, or you have thoughts?
This is enough.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I can't say, you know, I love Bock is a very simple. I love Bock. It's simple and delicious. You know, to say like if something can be put in other areas, I think that could be put in other duplicable. I think you say it like that. I think you could duplicate it.
Yeah. Because Bock's a couple thousand square feet.
Yep.
So it's it fits in. It's easy to find a location for. It's not the 20,000 square foot place. Those are harder to duplicate, I would imagine.
And you can ensure the quality. You can, you know, there's a lot of things there that I feel like, you know.
Probably license it or franchise it or something like that.
That's why I'll talk to you.
Yeah, for sure. Exciting stuff. So, yeah, so pick out which one has the bigger growth opportunity and go that way. But I have to imagine that because of the different menus, that's a lot of different choices that your people have to figure out how to make.
Yeah.
And so that adds to the complexity of running a business when you have that many choices or that many different, I guess, visions. Each restaurant has a sort of its own little theme.
Yeah. And I mean, not to mention, I mean, you know, I don't want to, you know, the brewery is a thing of its own. So we distribute all through California, Oregon, Colorado, Washington, Nevada. So we, you know, that has a good footprint of its own. So,
all right, I'm gonna have some more of this. This is the Luna Del meal. And you have how many different choices? You have like five different?
So five core beers, and then we do probably like seven different rotating beers throughout the year. And that's rotators that are in cans. And then we just do fun stuff that's just at the brewery. We do barrel-aged beers, whiskey barrel-aged beers, sour barrel-aged beers.
What's the most popular one?
Probably like Riding a Bike IPA.
It's called Riding a Bike?
Like Riding a Bike. Yep. And then Right is right under that. It's a hazy IPA.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Who's the creative person behind all these names?
You know, once you start drinking, you know, we have a thing Slack and you just put the names in, man. It's like, you know, I got an idea.
I love it. Okay. So thank you for what you do. Thank you for employing so many people here in Sacramento and building and growing and reinvesting. I love it. What did I not ask you today that maybe, hey, we need to get the word out about this or maybe some words of wisdom for the up and comer, the next guy that's thinking about doing this?
No, I think that, you know, just shout out to the whole hospitality industry, man. There's so many people that like, I'm just, you know, I'm honored to be a part of, you know. Billy, Crew, Oliver, you know, I mean, all these guys. Patricio has Nick's Taco up in, you know, in your neck of the woods in Roseville.
Yeah.
There's just so many people that, like you said, just, you know, Brad Chechi. There's just so many people that make this what it is. Patrick Mulvaney's of the world and all this. So it's just like, keep doing what you're doing, you know? And like you said, even when it's frustrating, it's hard. It's hard for everybody. But just keep doing what you're doing, because I think, I mean, Sacramento's special. And people recognize, like, even in New York, people were like, that have been to Sacramento, they're like, I really enjoyed that. People in the Bay Area, like, I really enjoyed Sacramento. So, you know, just
Rob Archie, Mr. Sacramento Restaurateur. I love it, man. Thanks for having me out.
Right on.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the good drink.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.